The Alaska Redistricting Board wants the state's highest court to reconsider its decision requiring Alaska's political boundaries be redrawn. Attorneys for the board and a petition filed this week say the court misconstrued or overlooked important facts in the case. They say the court ignored its duty in failing to answer whether the plan adopted by the board was constitutional. Attorneys also say the court violated the separation of powers doctrine by dictating the process the board must use in drawing a map. The divided Alaska Supreme Court last month ordered the redistricting plan be redrawn for the 2014 elections, finding that the board did not follow the process that it was instructed to follow. Redistricting has cost Southeast Alaska one lawmaker this session, and voters in the new District 34 have made things even more interesting by sending a freshman to the State House. Jonathan Christ Tompkins will be 23 years old when he's sworn in next Tuesday. KCAW's Robert Woolsey spoke recently with Christ Tompkins about his priorities.
I'm basically going to have my head down at the beginning and just watch as things sort of go around me. I haven't pre-filed any bills, and that's a very intentional decision.
Jonathan Christ Tompkins has spent a lot of time in Juneau recently, almost none of it devoted to setting up his office, which he wasn't even assigned until last Friday. Instead, he's been meeting with other members of the Democratic caucus and looking for ways to be effective.
I do have sort of a list of legislative priorities, many of which I discussed during the campaign. I mean, that range from adding sort of a frequent floater system for the marine highway system. I mean, something specific and concrete like that. I mean, to larger issues like energy independence for rural Southeast Alaska communities.
As a freshman, Christ Tompkins won't have much clout on the floor. He's going to try and make a difference in Juneau using skills he developed during his campaign. The biggest question mark in the governor's budget for Sitka, for example, is the absence of funding to complete the Blue Lake Dam expansion project.
I think it'll be a question of building relationships with officials within the various agencies and divisions who influence the governor's supplemental budget. And I'll be working hard on that. And then making the case to members of the Finance Committee that this is a project of great importance to Sitka, and I'm sure both Senator Stedman and myself will be doing that.
Regionally, one of the biggest issues is the governor's unilateral decision to scale back the Alaska-class ferry project. Christ Tompkins understands it was a legitimate choice of the executive branch, but he's far from happy with it.
There are policy decisions, and then there's process. And regardless of the policy of scrapping the Alaska-class ferry, which the governor has effectively done, there's the process about which you do that. And I think the process regarding the governor's change of course has been very concerning. I mean, there's damning circumstantial evidence. No legislators in Southeast knew prior to the governor's announcement. No members of MTAP, who supposedly advised the governor on marine transportation issues, knew about the announcement. Nor did the shipyard until the night before the announcement. I mean, everybody was in the dark, and nobody knew it was coming. And so when you're throwing two or more years worth of public process to decide on a vessel out the window abruptly, I mean, I think you can approach that in a more deliberate manner. And so the process has been, yeah, disappointing and concerning. Captain Newsel's resignation, I think, speaks to that. I mean, in a certain sense, the captain is going down with a ship.
Christ Tompkins has a seat on the Transportation Committee, which Peggy Wilson, a Republican who now represents Ketchikan, chairs. He definitely sees more common ground among Southeast legislators than differences and believes that unity will be effective on some issues. He says he feels well-suited to the work and is doing what he prepared for.
I am at the service of the people, and being the voice in government for 17,000 people in Southeast Alaska means being the voice and the advocate for a multitude of local issues that are important and that this office has the ability to influence. And so it's just as important as voting on legislation, perhaps more so. I mean, there are some great legislators in the history of Alaska, especially from rural regions, who never introduced a bill in their entire career.
Christ Tompkins says he will have a dynamic office, a session staffer, an intern, and a full-time aide, Nancy Barnes, whom he hired out of former Senator Albert Kukesh's office. Christ Tompkins is young, but he says he understands the value of experience.
Prior to the legislature, she worked for Governors Knowles, Hickel, and Cooper. So she's been in the Capitol, either for the governor's office on the third floor or in the legislature somewhere else in that building for longer than I've been alive.
Christ Tompkins will have an office expense account of $16,000. He says he plans to use the money to hire policy analysts on a case-by-case basis and to travel in the district. The Alaska legislature will convene on January 15th. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The Parnell administration is poised to introduce oil tax reform legislation again this session. Previous attempts have failed to gain enough support to pass the legislature. The new bill was previewed for the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce on Tuesday. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, it incorporates some ideas raised in recent years' discussions.
Alaska's current oil tax system allows companies to buy down their liability with infrastructure investment, but it also ups taxes at high oil prices, something the governor argues is stalling new production. Deputy Revenue Commissioner Bruce Tangeman says a bill planned for release next week by the governor doesn't throw out the current ACES system, but tweaks it to up oil output.
How do we tie those tax credits to production? And that's really what the bill is going to be focusing on is bringing down the progressivity to realign that, but also realigning the tax credits so they're not as harmful to the state up front, realizing that we have to give something back on the higher end to the companies in the out years.
Tangeman says the bill has not been finalized, so he cannot provide any specifics. He says it taps input from the last couple of years' oil tax debate, as well as from other states like North Dakota that have begun outproducing Alaska due to a boom in shale oil production. Shale oil is being investigated on the North Slope, and it's pointed to by some as a way to stem a long-trending production decline. But Tangeman says the drilling-intensive development will be tougher in Alaska.
In North Dakota, you can drive to every square block of the state, back a truck up, start drilling. The regions they're looking at on the North Slope, there's no roads at all. So if you look in North Dakota and Texas, it's like a checkerboard almost, and you can see drill rigs off on the horizon. So the first challenge is, how are we going to physically get this checkerboard of drill rigs out into the tundra?
Tangeman says shale oil development may not happen with Alaska's production tax and credit system, but that doesn't mean he's down on the potential for new oil production. He says the state has massive undeveloped and undiscovered oil sources, many conventional, and that warrants a tax model that allows high crude prices and big industry profits to drive production at the sacrifice of a shorter-term state revenue bonanza. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Democrats in the legislature's minority have not yet offered a counterproposal, but they have introduced some bills that handle some of their concerns about oil tax reform in a piecemeal fashion. One measure would require oil companies to provide detailed information on how much they're spending on their leases. Another bill would require the state to look at how much business a tax credit is actually bringing the state. Reviews of tax credits would occur after they've been in place for 7 years. According to a report done by the New York Times in December, Alaska spends more than $700 million on tax incentive programs each year. Anchorage Senator Bill Willikowski is the bill's sponsor.
We have no idea whether they're working. We have no idea what they're going for. The administration has testified. They don't know. They just don't know anything about whether or not these are working or not.
The bill would apply not just to oil tax credits, but also subsidies to the mining, construction, and film industries. Willikowski also thinks there may be some skepticism toward the governor's oil tax reform plan in the Senate, even with a solidly Republican majority. The general manager of the Capital City Weekly, who was arrested as a fugitive from justice, made another appearance in court yesterday. 50-year-old Dale Edward Smith was arrested December 10th on an outstanding warrant for felony non-support of a child. Smith's Alaska attorney, public defender Tim Ayer, told the court that another hearing is planned with Kansas officials tomorrow over continued payment of his obligation and a possible dismissal of an extradition request. Smith did not say anything in court himself. The Juneau police officer who arrested him attended the hearing yesterday, and Smith smiled and winked at him as he left the courtroom. Smith is currently out of custody after posting a $10,000 cash bail. The next Alaska hearing in the case is planned for March 11th.